Hello, everyone. This is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'm reading for you today here on the Courage Handyham System, CQ Magazine for March 2009, in digest format. CQ Magazine is published by CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. On the Internet, our website is www.handyham.org. I'll begin today in the CQ editorial, Zero Bias, by Richard Mawson, W2VU. It's titled, Its Rightful Place. I'm writing this the day after Inauguration Day. As always, I am in awe of the strength of our democracy as evidenced by the peaceful transfer of power from one administration to the next, and particularly from one political party to another. The images of President and Mrs. Bush warmly greeting President-elect and Mrs. Obama at the White House, then riding together to the Capitol and sitting on the stage together for the inauguration, speak volumes about our ability to come together as one people once the verbal battling of the election campaign is over. In far too many other countries, such battles are fought with bullets instead of ballots, and a transfer of power comes at the point of a gun. Inauguration Day, once again, was a proud moment for American democracy. In listening to President Obama's inaugural address, one line in particular caught my attention. Quoting, "We will restore science to its rightful place," close quote, said the president. I certainly hope that will happen sooner rather than later. We need to let science be science. Far too often in recent years, science has been hijacked by politics and by politicians to advance their goals. And this is not limited to any one party. At one end of the spectrum, you have a new scientific orthodoxy about the causes of global warming that rival scientific orthodoxy in the days of Galileo. If you are a scientist and do not agree that global warming is caused by human activity, despite the absence of conclusive evidence, correlation does not necessarily equal causation, you risk virtual excommunication by the mainstream scientific community for its equivalent of scientific heresy. At the other end of the spectrum, we have had scientific reports changed by politicians and even had final conclusions reversed when those were at odds with the politicians' preconceived notions. Both of these requirements to toe the party line amount to nothing more than scientific censorship and stifle a spirit of independent and unfettered inquiry that has been the hallmark of scientific endeavor since the end of the Middle Ages. It is, indeed, time to restore a science to its rightful place. As hams, we have a vital interest in this matter. Technology and science go hand in hand. Sometimes the greatest discoveries are made by going against the common wisdom. Cancer treatment inventor John Kenzius, K3TUP, interviewed in these pages just 2 months ago, said that if he had been formally educated in a process he developed, he would have known it was impossible, so he wouldn't have tried. But he didn't know it would not work, so he tried anyway, and lo and behold, it worked. There is much science to be done in ham radio for those so inclined. We depend on the ionosphere and the interactions between the sun and the earth to propel our signals over great distances. There is room in ham radio for learning about earth science, space science, physics, communication theory, and other scientific subjects. More importantly, though, ham radio presents a unique tool to help people learning science, especially young people, to get hands-on experience putting the theories they learn in their textbooks to practice in real-life settings. We are facing a nationwide shortage of scientists and engineers. Ham radio can help provide a low-pressure, low-intensity, high-fun introduction to a wide variety of fields. We can start helping by taking individual responsibility for welcoming one new person, perhaps one of our own children or grandchildren, into the excitement of amateur radio. In his issue, 2008 Newsline Young Ham of the Year, Emily Stewart, called KC0PTL, writes about her challenge to do just that to hams in her home state. The result of that challenge is the Kansas Legacy Project. Emily's story is on page 28. Accompanying her article is the announcement for the 2009 Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. CQ is co-sponsoring this program, by the way. If you know a ham who is 18 or younger and who is doing incredible things, read the rules and submit the nomination. Another way to help young people through ham radio is through the 4 dozen scholarships administered by the Foundation for Amateur Radio. There's a lot of scholarship money just waiting to be matched up with worthy recipients. The complete list of FAR, F-A-R, administered scholarships, along with eligibility details, is in the March issue of World Radio Online, which should be available for download from the CQ website by the time you receive this issue. And just a note, folks, it's already up online here on the Courage Handy Ham system. That particular article, I think, is not part of the Red Digest, however. But you can actually read World Radio Online on the website if you choose. Just go to our website at www.cq-amateur-radio.com and click on the World Radio Online link. Speaking of World Radio Online and speaking of inaugurations, we posted the inaugural online issue of the magazine on our website on Inauguration Day, January 20th. Initial response has been overwhelmingly positive. We believe World Radio Online is an excellent complement to CQ and urge you to check out either the February or March issue for yourself. Now, enter EQSL. That's a lowercase e with an uppercase QSL. Enter EQSL. In January, we announced that we would begin accepting QSO confirmations from EQSL.cc for credit toward CQ awards. Within a week, Alpha 71 Echo Mike A71EM qualified for the very first all EQSL Worked All Zones award. Our award managers have been working closely with the team at EQSL in setting this up. They are all confident that the confirmations they receive via EQSL are at least as secure as those they receive in the form of traditional QSL cards. In fact, their ability to check for a QSO in the log of the non-applicant station makes it even more secure than a traditional QSL card. Maintaining the integrity of our awards is their top priority, and we are confident in the integrity of the EQSL process that has been set up. We believe that the future of QSLing for reward purposes is electronic, due primarily to the ever-escalating costs associated with traditional QSLing. However, we do not believe that traditional QSLing for its own sake will ever go away. The feeling one gets when opening a packet of cards from the QSL Bureau or receiving your SASE, self-addressed stamped envelope, back in the mail, carrying the card of an exotic DX station, cannot be duplicated on a computer screen. But when it comes to operating awards, waiting for cards to come in can literally add years to the process. So we look to the online confirmation services for more and more of the QSOs that will be claimed for award credit. Many readers have asked why we have not set up a similar arrangement with ARRL's Logbook of the World, LOTW. It is certainly our intention to do so. We have been talking and working with the folks in Newington for nearly 3 years now, but progress has been slow. We plan to continue working with them and hope to be able to announce an arrangement for one or more of our awards in the not-too-distant future. Meanwhile, if you want to use online confirmations for CQ awards, then eqsl.cc is the place to be. That's signed 73 Rich, W2VU. Let's take a peek at ham radio news. Julius Janikowski, may be the new FCC commissioner. President Obama reportedly has chosen longtime friend, fundraiser, and technology advisor Julius Genachowski to be the next chairman of the Federal Communications Commission. While no formal announcement had been made as of press time, Janikowski's pick was widely reported in the mainstream media, and the White House made no effort to deny it. Janikowski was Obama's chief technology advisor during the campaign and transition period. He had previously served at the FCC as chief counsel under former chairman Reed Hunt. He is co-founder of Rock Creek Ventures, which provides funding for web startups, according to Bloomberg.com. From 1997 to 2005, Janikowski also helped run IAC, Slant Interactive, a company whose holdings include Ticketmaster, LendingTree, and the Home Shopping Network. If nominated and confirmed by the Senate, Janikowski would succeed Kevin Martin, who resigned as both chairman and FCC commissioner as of January 19, 2009. Martin joined the Aspen Institute's Communication and Society program as a senior fellow. He followed in the footsteps of his four most recent predecessors in joining the Institute upon leaving the commission. President Obama will have an additional vacancy to fill in the FCC. Commissioner Deborah Taylor Tate's term expires on January 3. Former President Bush had nominated her for an additional term, but Congress did not act on the nomination before adjourning last December. Currently serving commissioners are Michael Copps, Jonathan Edelstein, and Robert McDowell. Here's another news piece that might interest quite a few people. Projecting the impact of a geomagnetic superstorm. As the sun begins to rouse from its prolonged quiet period at the bottom of the sunspot cycle, hams around the world are looking forward to the next solar peak and the big band openings on HF and VHF that will accompany it. But a big solar peak can also result in big solar flares, followed by big geomagnetic storms here on Earth. And that has some researchers working for the National Academy of Sciences very worried. Their report, funded by NASA and released in mid-January, looks at the potential impact of a super solar flare followed by an extreme geomagnetic storm. According to NASA, the researchers looked at a huge geomagnetic storm that took place in 1921, estimated to be 10 times stronger than the 1989 storm that left 6 million people in Quebec without power for 9 hours. They then modeled its likely effects on the modern power grid. Conclusion? The electrical power distribution system is likely to collapse across the eastern one-third of the United States, as well as the Pacific Northwest, leaving more than 100 million people without power. You heard me right, folks. Projected economic impact is some 20 times greater than that caused by Hurricane Katrina. Oy vey. So, enjoy those hot spots. I mean, sunspots. Just keep hope that the sun doesn't get carried away with itself, okay? Another one to think about. 7 small ham satellites slated for January to launch. 7 small ham radio satellites were scheduled to be launched January 23 as secondary payloads on Japan's GOSAT Ibikui satellite launch. The AMSAT News Service reports that the primary payload is an environmental monitoring satellite measuring greenhouse gas levels. The 7 small ham satellites named Kagayaki, STARS, KKS-1, PRISM, SOHL-8-1, SPRITE, and SDS-1 will operate in the 70 centimeter band. Most will operate in digital modes and CW. Only the STARS, STARS satellite, will have FM voice capability. For more information and links to individual satellite websites, see the story on the main AMSAT-NA webpage at www.amsat.org. Folks, here's another reminder, somewhat in the news, and this is under the announcement section. Contest University registration is open. Registration is now open for Contest University, a popular pre-amvention feature held in Dayton, Ohio, on the Thursday preceding the opening of the Dayton Hamvention. There are separate tracks for new contesters and more experienced competitors. Additional information and online registration are available at www.contestuniversity.com. Let's take a peek across the water to UK. The United Kingdom Ham Club hits the lottery. The Chelmsford Amateur Radio Society in the United Kingdom is a big winner in the national lottery that provides grants to community groups. According to Newsline, the club was chosen to receive a grant of £10,000. That's approximately $13,800 US at the current exchange rates from the Awards for All program. Newsline says the club will use the money to further develop its training programs through the purchase of laptop computers and a video projector, and to buy transceivers, antennas, and a linear amplifier to outfit a ham station at the local Sanford Mill Science and Industry Museum. The lead major article in the March 2009 issue of CQ gives us the results of the 2008 CQ Worldwide WPX CW Contest. The author here is Randy Thompson, call K5ZD. Folks, I'm not going to read this article for you because it has fantastic amount of detail in terms of placements, awards by country, by nation, every kind of mode possible, I suppose, to work that the CQ Worldwide WPX CW Contest. So if you're interested in it, the story begins on page 13 of CQ Mag, March 2009, and actually continues way back on page 105 for another 7 pages of total results. Fantastic presentation by the magazine. They should be justly proud not only of the contest as it's a contest, but their own reporting of it through such diligent effort to inform everybody exactly where they finished or didn't finish. As I sit here, folks, and scan the pages of the magazine, because I sort of do it as I go along, I see an article that's subtitled, I'll give that before the real title, you'll know why in a moment, when virtually all television broadcasters in the United States shut down their analog transmitters this coming February, or is it June? I'm not even sure myself. The glut of perfectly good discarded analog TV sets will be a bonanza for hams. Why? Because the FCC didn't order hams to stop using analog for amateur television. Here's your opportunity to try this fun mode on the cheap. Now for the title. Go ATV with discarded analog televisions. The author is one of our favorites anyway, Gordon West, an old friend of the Courage Hand Ham System. I remember a personal note about 5-6 years ago when I was privileged to be invited to the Courage Hand Ham Camp in Malibu, California. I think that was in February or beginning of March that year. Gordon was one of the presenters there. He used to come around over the years with one of his old, I think it was actually a Chevrolet station wagon. Remember those big boats with the wood grain sides? He had every conceivable kind of antenna hookup and connection on that thing. It was really beautiful to see. Of course, Gordon does a great deal of work in training people to become amateur radio operators and technicians. So the article is by Gordon West. It's Go ATV with discarded analog television. I'm going to give you just a bit of it. The rest of it gets a little deep. And if you're not in a position where you can even work with stuff like this, I don't really want to bore you. It's not boring, but it is sort of hard to comprehend if you're not into that much electronics. Get set for some great deals on analog-only color TV sets. Your neighbors are likely dumping their old analog TVs in favor of a new high-definition TV or a simple digital tuner TV that will get great reception with rabbit ears in the garage after the February 17, 2009 switchover from analog to digital transmission. This gives you a unique opportunity to try one of ham radio's most fascinating modes, amateur television, or ATV, at a very little cost. Subtitled here, ATV Down Converters. One word, down converters. The way to get started with receiving amateur television is with an ATV down converter. The ATV down converter is inexpensive and simply converts one frequency down to another. What goes in is what comes out, just at a different frequency. ATV down converters consist of a low noise preamplifier, mixer, and local oscillator. The analog TV set is a receiver that does all the detection, AGC, that's automatic gain control, and fine-tuning to the down-converted signal. Most amateur television down converters for the 70-centimeter and 900 megahertz band will output the analog TV signals to a TV tuned to analog channel 3 or channel 4. For 1.2 gigahertz and higher reception, the output of the ATV and down converter may be analog TV channel 7 or 8 for better image rejection. Down converters are an inexpensive way to get started with ATV reception in the $100 to $150 range, with you supplying an analog TV receiver. So now, dear listener, if I've tweaked your curiosity enough to make you want to have it read back to you by someone who may help you if you're sight impaired, it begins on page 24 of March 2009 CQ. It gives a lot more detail and makes it look easy. It probably is once you get to know what it's all about. Our next major piece is Building a Legacy, Ham Radio, and Youth in the Heartland. The author is Emily Stewart, call KC0PTL. Emily Stewart, KC0PTL, is the 2008 Newsline Young Ham of the Year. As a co-sponsor of the award, CQ invited Emily to write an article about the activity that earned her the title. Here is her story, plus how you can help write the next chapter. Ham radio is an old man's sport. At least that's the myth. After a few years of being the exception to the rule, a YL licensed at age 10, I decided to be my own mythbuster. A small idea gathered momentum. Along the way, Kansas hams reached out to their younger family members, friends, and neighbors. Today, we have a growing group of young hams here in America's heartland. My own involvement in ham radio began in elementary school. When I was 8, my dad earned his license. He seemed to have fun with radios, and his interest led me to get my license a few years later. It took me 3 tries, but I passed the technician test in April 2003. Since then, I've been known as KC0PTL. Soon after getting my license, it became apparent that there were not a lot of kids on the air. In my local club, there were 3 licensed members under age 20. At most meetings, I would be the only person under age 40. At local hamfests, only a few children browsed the aisles. Ham radio was a little bit lonely as a kid. It seemed to be a retiree's hobby. None of my friends knew about amateur radio, so I decided to tell kids about my new hobby. As an elementary school and junior high student, I made ham radio presentations to my 6th and 7th grade classes. I arranged for other operators to be on the air and helped each student to make a contact using a portable radio. Gary Orchard, WB0MNA, and Dave Phillips, KE0DL, stood by on the local repeaters and talked with the students. From these 2 experiences, I saw that kids got interested if they saw ham radio in action. I also helped make a presentation to the Lansing Kiwanis Club in May of 2006 with Gary Hotchard, my dad. These activities were fun, but they did not produce any new hams. With the Internet and iPods, not too many youngsters I knew had any interest in learning how to build their own electronics. How could I get more kids interested? Finally, I found my inspiration, an online article written by Andrea Hartledge called KG4IUM, Newsline's 2004 Young Ham of the Year, spurred me to do something more. After learning how much she had done working with kids in Georgia, I felt that it was very important to tell future generations about amateur radio. In April 2006, I contacted the ARRL's Kansas section manager, Ron Cowan, KB0DTI. We talked on the phone, and he asked me a few questions. After the interview, he told me that he wanted me to serve as the assistant section manager for youth. As far as we know, I was the first person in the state to hold the office, Because of that, I started with very little guidance except the idea to get more kids involved. The most difficult part of the project is getting kids to take the license examination. Many of them are so absorbed with video games, texting, or surfing the web, they may not be drawn to reading a study guide. The good news is that online tests, such as those at QRZ.com, actually feel a lot like a memory game. If a ham is there to help explain why the answer is correct, you may find your youngster doesn't even need to crack a book. The student can learn by testing, and once on the air, have a chance to cement that knowledge by doing. While getting a kid to study and take the test is the most difficult task, the most important step is to get young people on the air and keep them there. Duncan McLaughlin, KU0DM, is Brian's nephew and shares his passion for all things ham radio, including recruiting. Duncan is the most active young operator I know, and he serves as the Youth Outreach Coordinator for Johnson County, Kansas, A-R-E-S. You may know him as the new editor of the ARRL's Youth, that Ham Radio Fun column. Your kids and grandkids may know you're a ham, but do they know why they should be? You know what they like, so it's up to you to explain the benefits of ham radio. Teach them by your good example how much fun it can be to be a considerate amateur radio operator. Still, you may be wondering how you can get the iPhone generation interested in ham radio. Here are some activities and approaches we've found are successful. 1. Make youth recruiting your club focus for 1 year. Assign a task to each of your members to recruit one new ham each year and one new ham under 18 in 2009. 2. Use special events and everyday opportunities to introduce them to amateur radio. Put kids in front of the microphone on Kids' Day, on a local net, during a contest, or for field day. Show them how to operate your mobile rig or base station. Take an HT handy talkie on a camping or hiking trip and use it to keep in touch with others in the group. Take them along on a public service event to demonstrate how critical ham radio is during large-scale events when cell phones just don't cut it. 3. If you homeschool your kids or know of someone who does, teach them all they need to know to get their license. There are lots of free resources online to help your sons and daughters get licensed. 4. Make sure kids have access to a radio if they're already licensed but not active. 5. One traditional route to getting young people started in ham radio is the Radio Merit Badge. It is a great way to get scouts license. Talk to the local scoutmaster about teaching a technician course. If the scouts pass, they are definitely qualified for their Radio Merit Badge. Pair the licensing class with the next JOTA event to get the new licensees on the airs. JOTA is the Jamboree on the Air. 6. Ask HamFest organizers about setting up a youth table or having a youth forum at the HamFest. Get young hams to staff the table and give them materials to help get young people at the fest started toward their licenses that day. 7. Take your kids to the HamFest. Explain the use of the equipment that is on sale. Watch what they get excited about most and use that as a selling point for their licensing. 8. Kids love to solder. Buy kids a kit, maybe a crystal radio or a simple transceiver, and assist them with building and testing the radio. You do remember how to solder, don't you? 9. Ask one of your younger members to write a youth column in the local ham radio club newsletter. 10. Start a local youth net on one of your area repeaters. Get a young net control operator to run the weekly net. Make sure you focus on helping the young hams become accustomed to operating. 11. Kids love digital modes. Today's young people are computer savvy. Focus on modes with wow factor, including computer modes such as APRS, PSK31, and SSTV. There are a number of weekly Echolink nets run by kids, too. 12. Contesting is a very exciting part of ham radio for new hams. Host an open house and put prospective young hams on the microphone at the local contest station during one of the big competitions. If you can expose them to the contesting bug, they will be bugging you to let them earn money by doing chores around the house or farm so they can put together their dream station. 13. Teach a ham radio licensing class yourself. Target local schools, churches, and scouting organizations for your students. You can find all the materials you need at www.hamclass.org. That's www.hamclass.org. 14. Begin building your own local network of adults and kids to actively recruit the younger generation in the hobby. The newer the hams, the more likely they are to recruit their friends into the hobby. After a recent technician class, a 12-year-old graduate recruited 5 new young hams the very next class. Ham radio is a hobby for life, and it blends perfectly with nearly every other hobby. With ham radio, you are always learning something new. For kids, the amateur radio service provides a window into a world of technology that they might want to make into a career. Families and friends that queue so together stay together. Parents, grandparents, and children can all come together to share the joy and spirit of ham radio that have been captivating kids of all ages for generations. Folks, to complete the thoughts expressed in this article, I'm going to read for you the nominations that are open for 2009 Young Ham of the Year Award. Nominations are now open for the 2009 Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award. The Young Ham of the Year Award is presented annually to a licensed amateur radio operator who is 18 years of age or younger, is a resident of the United States, Canada, or Puerto Rico, and who has provided outstanding service to his or her nation or community, or improved the state of the art in communications through the amateur radio hobby service. The Young Ham of the Year Award is sponsored by the Amateur Radio Newsline, with corporate support from Vertex Standard, Yaesu, and CQ Communications Incorporated, this magazine. A nominee should be someone who has done something outstanding as an amateur radio operator. Perhaps it was something special he or she did for his or her community through the amateur service. Maybe it was some outstanding achievement that led to an improvement in amateur radio in his or her area. Or perhaps he or she was successful in recruiting a lot of new hams, as was the case with 2008 honoree Emily Stewart, KC0PTL. The accomplishments of previous winners may be found on the Young Ham of the Year website. All nominations must be received by May 30, 2009 on an official application and be accompanied by verification materials. Applications forms are available for a self-addressed stamped envelope mailed to the Young Ham of the Year Award, care of Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue. That's 28197 Robin, R-O-B-I-N, Avenue, Santa Clarita. Santa, one word, Clarita, C-L-A-R-I-T-A. Santa Clarita, California, CA, zip code 91350. These nominating applications are also available for electronic download or online submission on the Young Ham of the Year website at www.yhoty.org or www.arnewsline.org. Let's move now to public service. The author here is Bob Jesuit, W-A-3-P-Z-O. It's titled, No Holiday Rest for Some Hams. As many of us were preparing to enjoy the holidays for our family and friends, other amateur radio operators were staffing emergency operations centers, shelters, National Weather Service offices across the country. A mid-December ice storm activated members of the Radio Amateur Civil Emergency Service, RACES, Amateur Radio Emergency Service, ARIS, Skywarn, and several military-affiliated radio service groups, MARS. Emergency management and National Weather Service officials notified the hams that the storm could be a long-term event. In New York State, heavy coatings of ice on the power lines and breaking trees snapped even sturdy telephone cables, causing many telephone lines to go dead or have intermittent service. According to emergency management officials, users of Internet-based services lost telephone service as electricity or broadband cables went down. Even some cell phone users experienced interruptions. The loss of telephone service for several hours at a warming shelter in central New York prevented shelter officials from contacting the emergency management agency. And radio operators quickly provided a communications link once they were aware of the problem. In Seattle, Washington, Barb Graff, emergency management director, described the winter storm, which began on December 11, as a 100-year storm. The only problem with the description, she said, is that the 100-year storm is occurring on an annual basis. When she reported to the city council in early January on the area's response to the storm, she said that ham radio is often the last line of communications and often the first line of response. The hams are members of the Auxiliary Communications Service, ACS. Those with four-wheel drive vehicles responded to 23 calls to help get dialysis patients and workers to area hospitals. She told the council that she would continue to revisit our request for a coordinator for citizen volunteers. Knowing the budgets are tight, she made a point that for now, ACS rocks. At deadline for this column in mid-January, emergency managers were still responding to weather-related issues. Widespread flooding was occurring in western Washington. Meteorologists said it rained 10 to 20 inches in the mountains and 3 to 5 inches in the lowlands. Most of that water went into the rivers. The meteorologists emphasized that the flooding was caused by rain and not melting snow. Tom Kinahan, N1CPE, Massachusetts State Racist Radio Officer, told CQ that Skywarn had been activated on the evening of December 11, just as the rain was changing to ice and temperatures had started dropping below freezing. At about 5 a.m. on December 12, state officials called racist operators to the state EOC to start staffing the racist position, where they were asked to join the ESF2 communications team and to help the state and local decision-makers get an understanding of the situation across the state. Initial activities at the state EOC had racist operators working with the Skywarn network to determine the extent of the icing as well as power and communications outages in Massachusetts and New England. Kinahan said there were reports of up to 1 inch of icing on trees and power lines, leading to massive tree damage and power outages across the north-central part of the state, as well as into the western part of the state. As the reports came in, the picture was being painted as to how bad the situation was in the location of power outages. State officials were worried about the cold weather turning colder, as was predicted, with over 300,000 homes without power and downed trees blocking nearly every street in the affected area. Power was not going to be restored quickly. Not only was the duration of the activation long, many areas of the state were not affected, and those hams still had to go to their day jobs, and those in the affected areas had their own problems with no power and trees down on their property. Kinahan said the call went out for additional ARIS support between the neighboring ARRL sections of eastern Massachusetts, led by Section Emergency Coordinator SAC Rob Macedo, KD1CY. As a note, folks, Rob is one of the members of the Samara Radio Club in southeastern Massachusetts. I'm a member of that organization as well. We thank Rob for his dedication to the weather-related problems and the help of amateur radio. Continuing, and western Massachusetts, led by SEC John Ruggiero, call into YHK. ARIS mutual assistant teams from the North Shore area of Massachusetts provided leadership and ARIS management for shelters and EOCs in Gardner, Massachusetts, where the emergency management director is a ham, Paul Topolsky, WNSCX, under the direction of Jim Palmer, KB1KQW. Hams and Lemonster provided support to their local EOCs from the onset of the storm. In the early stages of the storm, all of the local 2-meter repeaters in Worcester County, the most severely damaged area, were out of service. The only means of voice communications to some communities was via ham repeaters. We focus quite a bit lately on young hams, and will continue to do so. But we also wanted to highlight a new ham who's part of one of the faster-growing segments of amateur radio. Those who enter the hobby for the first time when they're beyond retirement age. Helen Charlemagne, a young at heart new ham at 88. The contributing author here is Dennis McCarthy. Call is Alpha Alpha Zero Alpha. First a quotation. "I'm getting on the radio and that's the beginning of something." Close quote, said Helen Charlemagne, W0AKI. The fact that she is 88 years old and has had multiple sclerosis for 45 years is not stopping her beginnings. Helen got her technician license last July, originally licensed as a KD0EOM, and is working towards passing her general class examination in the near future. Helen's age means nothing to her. The fact that she has multiple sclerosis means little. "I'm reinventing myself," Helen said in a recent interview at her modest frame house in Hazelwood, Missouri, a suburb of St. Louis. To do that, she has to do a lot more than others might have to do. Her disease forces her to use a walker. Walking on her twisted right leg must be painful, but her face doesn't show it. Indeed, it does not. There's a beautiful full-color photograph of this young lady, and she looks just great with that smile. Helen has two rigs. One is in her shack, and the other is a handy talkie that has an external antenna attached to a glider on the back deck of her well-kept home. Her shack is adorned with wallpaper, accumulated by her late husband Kenneth, the original W0AKI, who died in November of 2007 and whose call she now holds through the Vanity Call Sign program. "Ham radio meant so much to Ken, and now it is becoming a part of my life," Helen said. "I remember he would always go to the ham shack at 7 p.m. so he could rag Jew." The story goes on to detail her activities. The last commentary, however, just simply puts it the way it should be. "I don't think of myself as handicapped," she said. "I intend to use my amateur radio to help the area in event of emergencies." Helen Charlemagne, a young at heart new ham at 88. Well, we keep getting back to kids. Here we go with Kids Corner, spelled K-O-R-N-E-R. The author is Brittany Decker, K-B-1-O-G-L. Young Amateur's Guide 2009, Clubs for Kids. In this installment of Kids Corner, I thought I would start off the new year by highlighting three youth clubs with a lot of promise. Two of them, Yacht, Y-A-C-H-T, and the DAR Radio Club are related, and one feeds members to the other. The third, 68BSARC, which came to my attention most recently, is still in its ham shack stages, working out mission statements, club call signs, and long-term goals. However, no matter how small or large they are, all three of these clubs show great potential, and the members have lots of fun. DAR Boys and Girls Club of America and Ham Radio. The DAR Boys and Girls Club was founded 92 years ago to help keep young boys off the streets. DAR stands for Daughters of the American Revolution. It is an organization of people who can trace their families back to someone who fought on the American side in the Revolutionary War. The Boys and Girls Clubs of America is a youth organization with clubs across the country. The DAR Boys and Girls Club in Menominee, Michigan, provides all kinds of activities, such as sports, arts and crafts, and board games for children and teens of all ages. It also has a ham radio facet called the DAR Radio Club, founded by Ed Engelman, called KG8CX. The main focus of the DAR Radio Club is to pique kids' interest in amateur radio and to help them obtain their license. This serves as a beginning school in that after the children obtain their license, they have the choice to move up to the Yacht Club, Y-A-C-H-T. The Yacht Club, or the Young Amateur Contest Ham Team, It's solely focused on helping young amateurs explore amateur radio and hone their operating skills to the best of their potential. As compared with the DAR Radio Club, Yacht is like finishing school for the young amateur. Ed Engelman and Jim Pearson elaborate further. As an outgrowth of the DAR Boys and Girls Club Hamp Radio Project, the Yacht Club was formed with five local licensed youngsters during the summer of 2007. The goal at that time, which continues to this day, was to expose young hams to the worldwide sport of contesting. Jim, KS8O, along with Ed, KG8CX, spearheaded the beginning and continuation of the Yacht program. Contesting is the major component of the Yacht group, but we also encourage our members to explore other areas of amateur radio. Having fun is the primary objective of the group. The club call sign K8KDZ now is being heard and recognized in many major contests. The CQ Worldwide DX Single Sideband Contest was a major event for a number of Yacht and several DAR club members. The club currently has a membership of 44 young members and 11 team coaches. 8 states and 1 DX country are now represented within the club membership. Our newest members, 1 coach and 2 young members, are from South Africa. One day, we hope to increase our membership to include members from other countries around the world. In order to keep in contact, discuss contesting and other ham radio activities, and enjoy the camaraderie, Brittany Decker, KB1OGL, the author of this article, of Hudson, New Hampshire, one of our charter members, came up with the idea of an Echolink Youth Net. It is now known as the Echolink International Youth Net and can be heard every Saturday at 1700 Zulu on the K9KJM Sturgeon Bay repeater with a node number of 44407. Folks, I'm going to repeat that again for you slowly. That can be a boon for these young people if you have a ham radio capability and are registered with the Echolink Net. It's known as the Echolink International Youth Net and can be heard every Saturday at 1700 Zulu, that's Greenwich Mean Time, you know, on the K9KJM, Kilo 9 Kilo Juliet Mike, Sturgeon Bay repeater, with a node number of 44407. All youth and hams interested in the development of youth involvement in ham radio are encouraged and welcome to join in. One of our future goals is to gather as a group at the annual Dayton Hamvention. This would allow members to meet with one another and with hams from around the world. Folks, the author, Brittany Decker, from New Hampshire there, has done a fine job of putting this rather lengthy article together with a lot of reference material, a lot of interesting commentary from various sources regarding amateur radio and youth involvement. Do you have a story that would go great in Kids Corner? Let Brittany know. Email her at her call, KB1OGL at CQ-amateur-radio.com. Look for the next issue of Kids Corner in the June issue of CQ Magazine, 73, and have a happy new year. It's signed by Brittany, KB1OGL. Let's see what's happening long-distance-wise in amateur radio. DX, Delta X-ray, by Carl Smith, call N4AA, November 4, Alpha Alpha. This is titled DX Action. How did it get to be March already? The holidays and moving toward mid-January as I write this, and I'm still shaking my head trying to come to grips with it all. Why, it will be time for the Dayton Hamvention before you know it, and I'll still be looking at Valentine's Day cards. Okay, let's get down to business. DX business, that is. Now, regarding DX activities, Palestine. The timing for the E44M, that's Echo 44 mic, operation from Palestine couldn't have been more troubling, and it ended the weekend of January 10, 11. With the intense military action in Gaza going on just a short distance from the West Bank where the team had set up their operation, I'm sure they had some concerns. In any event, the team proceeded to do a very creditable job in spite of some outright scandalous intentional interference. I've complained about this stuff before, but during this operation it was totally uncalled for. I have no idea who did it or why, although I have some private thoughts about it. I highly commend the team members for their dedication to the operation they had planned. Propagation certainly was a factor in many not being able to hear them very well, and with the QRM on top of that, the fact they did so well is a tribute to that dedication. We owe them a big thank you. Now, the operation from Desecho, D-E-S-E-C-H-E-O. I probably slaughter that name every time I say it, folks. I apologize. I really don't know the actual pronunciation of Desecho. By the time you read this, the operation from Desecho, KP-5, will have concluded. The team planned an outstanding program to work as many stations as humanly possible from February 12th through 26. Great radios with amplifiers, a super field of antennas, and then the thing that makes it all work, a great team of operators at the key, microphone, or keyboard to make those contacts. I'll be able to report more on this operation next month when they have had time to get home and put pen to paper. Tunisia, TS-7C, Tango Sierra 7 Charlie, from Tunisia, should have been another outstanding operation in January. With a team of 26 operators from several countries and enough equipment to sink a fair-sized ship, they had everything going for them, until they reached a customs office, and all of the radios were seized and taken away for inspection when they arrived in the country. A few days passed, and three of them were released, which allowed some operation to begin. The remaining radios were held for several more days, and I won't know until after this column was already submitted whether or not they were released or when. I hope the customs folks will not do any damage or cause further delay to what should have been a very good de-expedition. Let's move now to Sable Island. The CY-0, Charlie Yankee 0, Sable Island de-expedition 2009 has been postponed. Duane, called WV-2B, said, quoting, "Reluctantly, due to the current U.S. economic situation, the de-expedition team has decided to postpone the CY-0 de-expedition planned for 2009. While we are hopeful to reorganize the de-expedition possibly for 2010, we have decided that rather than tie up the funds so graciously made available by our sponsors, we will return donations received so the sponsorship may be available to other de-expeditions for this year. Any sponsoring organization may feel free to contact me with any questions regarding the matter. We are hopeful that our kind sponsors will be willing to renew the sponsorship when the de-expedition is able to be reorganized in the future." The SableDX.com website will remain functional for the time being. Now, regarding German postage, there has been a lot of conversation about the high cost of postage from Germany. Klaus, called DL2QB, offers some insight from the German side into the postage situation. These are his comments. "Postage for airmail letters to destinations outside Europe from Germany is quite high and, unfortunately, exceeds $2, about $2.20 right now. This means that an American would have to spend 3 green stamps in order to cover the postage costs for an SAE. One way of avoiding this costly procedure is to buy German stamps from somebody offering that service in the U.S. or another country, but this comes with additional postage costs and fees for the service. Most recently, the German Post is offering a so-called internet stamp that anybody in the world can print out him or herself. Payment, among other alternatives more suitable for the domestic market, can be done via PayPal. You can print out the stamp or stamps on a plain sheet of paper and then glue it onto the SAE or use self-sticking labels. Unfortunately, the internet pages by the German Post, www.internetmark.de, are only in German, and it will probably be too difficult for somebody not knowing the language to navigate through the pages. Nevertheless, I wanted to mention this interesting alternative for creating your own German stamps. Minimum order of stamps to be printed out would be €10, approximately 13 U.S. dollars. Folks, I'm sort of winding down, and I come upon Contesting by John Doerr, called K1AR. The calendar of events, this is for DXing mostly. In the month of March, March 7 and 8, ARRL single sideband DX contest. That's really a biggie. If you have a radio or even just a shortwave listening radio, you can hear a lot of amateur activity from around the world on that one. So that's March 7 and 8 for ARRL single sideband DX contest. Also those dates, the RSGB Commonwealth CW contest. Same dates, Ukrainian RITI championship. Now March 14 and 15, Idaho QSO party, Virginia QSO party, Wisconsin QSO party. And on March 15, North American RTTY RITI Sprint. March 21-22, BARTG HF RITI Contest. Same dates, Russian DX Contest. Here's another huge one. This is the CQ Contest. March 28-29, CQ Worldwide WPX Single Sideband Contest. That's a great one from this magazine that we're reading to you. March 28-29. Now, April 4 and 5, QCWA QSO Party. That's a Quarter Century Wireless Association QSO Party. Same date, SPDX Contest. I think that's Poland. April 4, 5 again, Spanish RTTY Contest. April 4, 5 again, ARCI QSO Party. And lastly, we're projecting ahead now, but this is another of the great CQ Magazine contests. May 30-31, CQ. Worldwide WPX CW Contest. For those of you that are not familiar with CW, that's the good old Morse code, dots and dashes. Still a great part of the amateur radio hobby throughout the world. Ladies and gentlemen, that just about brings me up to time for this month's reading on the Courage Handyham system of CQ Magazine, Amateur Radio Communications and Technology, for the month of March 2009. CQ Magazine is a publication of CQ Communications Incorporated, 25 New Bridge Road, Hicksville, New York, 11801. You can reach them by telephone at area 516-681-2922, or you can email them at cq-amateur-radio.com. This recording is a production of the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota, 55422. It is for the use of eligible Handyham members only. Any other use may violate copyright laws. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address, lowercase, Handyham, that's spelled H-A-N-D-I-H-A-M, one word, Handyham at Courage, C-O-U-R-A-G-E, .org. Our website is www.handyham.org. My name is Bob Zeta. I spell as Z-E-I-D-A. My amateur radio call sign is N1-B-L-F, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. My QTH, or geographic location, is Dartmouth, Massachusetts. We're located right down here on the south coast of New England, about 50 miles below Boston, right up against New Bedford, Massachusetts, the fishing capital of America. Right on Buzzards Bay, you can wave at me while you're heading down to Cape Cod all this summer. I'm right on exit 12 of 195. If you have any comments you'd like to pass along to me directly via email, my email is my call sign, N1BLF, at comcast.net. I'd appreciate that. And if they're constructive and they make a lot of sense to me, as I scan the magazines, I'll try to employ some of your thoughts and comments, and maybe some articles that I somehow or other always manage to go by, maybe because I think they're too technical or I can't understand them myself. I think you get the message. So thanks again for listening here on the Courage Handyham System. Again, Bob Zeta, N1BLF 7388.